So you can come in.
Now, do we have members of the public in?
Yes, they're all here.
Everyone who is registered to speak is in.
There are some just currently joining, but yes, they
I think
are.
we should wait for everyone.
We have no other, oh, just one more person. Chair, there are no other people waiting to
Right. Well,
be admitted.
in that case, we can formally commence the meeting. This is a formal meeting of the Inner West Local Planning Panel. And in opening the meeting, I should, on behalf of the Council, acknowledge the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation on whose country we are meeting today, their elders past and present. Next, for the information of the public, it is appropriate the panel members introduce ourselves, and we will proceed to do that now. I'm David Lloyd, I chair the meeting. I'm a lawyer, I'm a QC, I'm a former judge of the Land and Environment Court, I'm a former acting judge of the Supreme Court, and currently a professor of law at Western Sydney University. Mrs. Taylor.
Meriden Taylor, I'm a planning lawyer and I'm on a number of these local panels, having started the first one in the 90s in Liverpool Council area, and I sit on a number of panels as the chair. Thank you.
And then we have Mr. Kirk.
Brian Kirk, I'm a town planner and land economist. I run my own town planning practice, and I also sit on a number of state and local planning panels.
And finally, Ms. Roach.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Kath Roach. I have a company, Sync Solutions. I do a lot of work predominantly with local government across New South Wales and work at various councils in a variety of aspects, mostly in a review of information and providing provision of advice aspect to senior management. In this particular council, I am here as the community rep, partly based on my obviously locality. Also worked with Housing New South Wales for a number of years as well in governance and regulation. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
All right, the next item on the agenda is declarations of interest, and I'm pleased to say that there are none. So now we go on to the various items, individual items on the agenda. Item one is a standing item, being a report to the panel of all the outstanding applications that are due to come to the panel, and that is for information. Item number two is a request for delegations to the council's in-house solicitors in relation to appeals. By way of explanation, if an appeal is brought to the court against a panel determination, the appeal is subject to the control and direction of the panel. However, often decisions have to be made on the spur of the moment, and it is quite impractical to engage the panel. So the panel is asked to delegate to its in-house solicitors that function, and the panel has agreed to do so. The next item on the agenda is item number three. This is proposed alterations and additions to an existing townhouse at 236 Johnston Street, Annandale. There are no objectors to this proposal, and there is no one registered to speak. The application is acceptable and is recommended for approval subject to conditions, and I'm correct, I believe, in saying that the panel is in agreement with the recommendation. Am I correct, Ms. Roach?
Yes.
And Mrs. Taylor and Mr. Kirk.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Kath Roach here. I concur.
I agree, Marilyn Taylor.
Yep.
So that's a fairly uncontroversial application. Next, we come to item number four. Item number four is the first of two applications relating to the Fenwick Restaurant in Western Street, Balmain East. The first application relates to physical alterations to the restaurant. The second application, which we will deal with after the first, is in relation to conditions under which the restaurant operates. So the first application is to provide a glazed airlock structure within the building. Second, to install overhead shelving to the existing bar and kitchen area. Next is the formal provision of outdoor shade umbrellas for the approved outdoor seating. Next is to provide an external coffee cart. Next is to provide an external bin storage enclosure. And the final alteration is to install air conditioning with the location of the existing condenser external to the building under the northern stair access. We have a number of people who wish to address the panel on this application. I should remind everyone that the protocol governing these meetings allows members of the public to address the panel for up to 3 minutes. So we will now proceed to do that. The first person on my list is Mr. Gary Saunders. Do we have Mr. Saunders here? We should have. And if Mr. Saunders is there, would you please make sure that your mic is turned on?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. I can see that Mr. Saunders is there and he's just trying to mute on and off at the moment, so I can certainly see him there. Gary can't hear you at the moment.
We'll give Mr. Saunders a moment.
Mr. Chair, why don't we move to the next objector and then come back to Mr. Saunders?
Then we'll do that. Mr. Dobby, please.
Hello, it's Warwick Dobby from 3 Western Street, the immediate neighbours of the Fenwick Restaurants. I'm speaking in opposition to this DA, in particular regarding the installation of air conditioning plant outside of the building.
Yes.
Any decision on installation of air conditioning plant outside the Fenwick building must be considered in the context of existing offensive noise problems that surrounding residents are already experiencing from the restaurant. In particular, the kitchen fan above the lift well is currently in operation 24 hours a day, even outside of trading hours, and this constant noise is already disturbing neighbours' quiet enjoyment of their properties. Due to this, our former tenants had to move into a small bedroom at the rear of the property to get a good night's sleep. They quoted the unacceptable noise level as the main reason for their decision to leave the tenancy. Now, in determining what impact additional air conditioning plant installed outside the building might have on immediate neighbours, we submit that any decision by the panel should only be made once the council compliance officers have finalised their current investigation into these existing offensive noise levels. We therefore ask that the panel defer their consideration of this day until such time as the council investigation is complete and is reported back on this issue. In the alternative, if the DA is to be considered today, we submit that the installation of air conditioning plant outside the building contravenes the terms of existing plan of management, which provided that all such equipment be contained within the footprint of the building, a condition the applicant was well aware of when commencing trading. The concern is that while air conditioning plant can be turned off after hours, refrigeration condenser plant, if relocated from within the building, will run outdoors 24/7. If this condition is to be ignored, air conditioning plant should only be installed on the lower level of the building and should be as far away from neighbouring properties as possible. In addition, the equipment's vents air outlet should be facing away from neighbouring homes towards the harbour. Refrigeration condensers should at very least remain within the building. Following installation, there should be an independent assessment of the noise burden on residents, and if it exceeds statutory limits and continues to constitute an unacceptable nuisance to immediate neighbours, the applicant should, at their own expense, be required to provide double glazing on the windows of neighbouring properties affected. Having said this, we would prefer, if this matter were deferred until the panel can take into consideration the findings of the council compliance investigation into the existing offensive noise situation, so the panel can make an informed decision on this DA. That concludes my address to the panel.
Well, before you depart, I'll ask the panel if anyone has any questions.
No, thank you.
No, thank you. No, thanks, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you for that. Now, the next person, I'll see if Mr. Saunders is online. Do we have Mr. Saunders yet?
I can see Mr. Saunders, but he's still not able to. We're still not able to hear him, unfortunately.
Perhaps he could telephone into the council.
Well, Mr. Saunders, while we're trying to work that one out, we'll hear from the next person, Helen Quilliam, please. Is Helen Quilliam there? I have to say to those who wish to speak, you have to activate your mic.
Perhaps Cathy Conti could contact Mr. Saunders. He's clearly here, Mr. Chair.
But we can't hear him.
I know.
And also, Helen Quilliam, I can see a Quilliam in the waiting room as well. She's, thank you, Cathy. Can you hear her?
No, she does have her mic muted, so I'm unsure.
Perhaps these people can be told how to unmute their mic by going to the top of the screen and pressing the screen and going to the top of the screen, and you'll see a mic symbol with a red line through it. You have to press that to unmute.
Thanks, Warwick. I can see that Gary's been trying to do that unsuccessfully, and I think Helen was as well. Cathy, we haven't got any. Sorry, Mr. Chair, Cathy, we haven't got any overriding thing pressed for them not to speak. Oh, no. Helen, is that you?
Yes.
Okay,
I've just
missed. Thanks, Cathy.
Sorry, it's taken so long. I also wish to speak on the noise from the current exhaust system. And if that's not going to reduce, then I believe that the noise from the new air conditioning and cool room condenser will add dramatically to the noise we already experience. The plan of management states that all facilities must be accommodated within the building footprint, but the report from council seems to exclude that. And states that it is permissible outside under the stairs to add the condensers. The other point I wish to make is that the coffee cart in the location shown on the plan fits in its folded state, but it would not be possible to open fully in that location.
Is there anything else you wish to add?
Well, how would the monitoring be done of the new condensers?
There is a requirement that they have to comply with the noise control measures. And let me explain. The conditions of consent require that the noise level emitted from the premises shall not exceed 5 decibels above the background between the hours of 7 a.m. to 12 midnight. After midnight, there shall be no noise emitted from the premises. I repeat, no noise.
Well, that's certainly not the current situation.
Well, that is the condition that has been recommended to us, and that is the condition we would impose if we were to approve this application.
Right. I might add that the recordings taken in 2019 took place while the Barangaroo train tunnelling was 24 hours a day, so I'm sure it would have affected it.
All right. Any other questions from the panel?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Chair, could I just interrupt for one moment? I did speak to Gary, and he said to me that he wasn't able to get his take the mute off, but we'll be going to Helen's place. Helen, I believe that he'll be coming there to your place.
Oh, I did hear the doorbell. I will let him in right now.
That would be Gary.
Well, we'll just wait for him.
Oh, now it's terrible again. Hearing is waiting.
Ta-da! Can you see me?
Mr. Saunders.
That's me. I'm with Helen Quilliam at the moment.
All right. Well, then it doesn't matter. We know who you are. You can proceed.
Okay. About every 18 months, it appears to me that Fenwick's put in a new and amended DA, either for extension of trading hours or to increase their footprint on the site at the building and the surrounding areas. And I think each time they do, they further alienate the community access to that land. It's not private land, as you know, it's community land. And we've just seen it whittled away bit by bit over the years. And this is just another but substantial step where by increasing the footprint, particularly as regards the umbrellas, they have now been made larger and grouped so that effectively they form an outside room right in the middle of the forecourt, which is accessed by the public. But because it's such a large structure, although it's made of umbrellas, it alienates people's access to a number of key things. The toilets, which is very hard to find, there's not many signs pointing you in that direction. The lift, the stairs that go up to Western Street, and the large oversized coffee cart, which will be wheeled out, will be 4.4 metres long. That takes a huge extra space apart from the addition of the grouped umbrellas. So what we see is increasingly that this space is being alienated against the plan of management. The plan of management clearly says, I'll just quote it, there should be no additional infrastructure accommodated on or near the site. This is infrastructure. You heard from earlier speakers about the condensers being placed under the staircase. That is not within the building footprint. That cannot be allowed. And I think what look like temporary structures, the coffee cart and the umbrellas, are in fact additional infrastructure. It also says all facilities must be accommodated within the building footprint. Well, that clearly is not happening. As you said, there's an application to put condensers and air conditioners without any noise controls under the steel staircase. How can that be? If you read the plan of management, it's very clear. All facilities must be accommodated within the building footprint.
Mr. Saunders, what this application seeks to do is to, in effect, vary that plan of management by allowing these structures to be there. And that's what we're interested in, is why, what is your objection to these additional structures being allowed?
Because they are alienating community space. That's the fundamental argument.
Okay, I see.
Further alienating community space. They don't have a right to to keep expanding their commercial operation at the expense of community access to land that the community already owns.
All right, I follow that. Any questions by the panel?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Could I ask just one other point? One of my colleagues asked that I cover it if I had the opportunity. When we put our objections in for either noise or for the expanded Fenix footprint, the information, from what I understand, does not come to the panel directly. There is a medium in the middle, which the council officers who read the objections interpret them and provide the panel with a summary of what people have said.
But we do have your written objection.
Okay, you do. Do you get them all, do you, sir?
We do.
And do they read them?
Okay, well, my objection was that I thought there would be a conflict of interest if the council did not pass them all on to you.
Well, we have them.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Now we can proceed to the next speaker, the Mayor, Mr. Byrne.
Mr. Chair, I saw something come through from Council just preceding this meeting saying that Mr. Byrne would now, Honour of Vice Speaker, would now not be speaking today on either item 4 or 5, and that Mr. Dobby is also listed to speak on item 5. They're the two changes that just came through, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thanks for that. Well, then, Mr. Brown, is Mr. Christopher Brown there, please?
Thank you, Chairman. Can I just say, isn't democracy grand? It's endearing to watch community consultation at real pace. So thank you for the opportunity. If it suits the panel, I'm happy. I think I'm listed for 4 and 5. I'm happy to combine a general comment and spare your time. And I don't think I need to speak twice. I speak as convener of the Peninsula Partnership, the civic leadership group for the region. We spoke and I addressed your panel, maybe it's 18 months ago when this matter first came up, and I made my point clear then that we as a community, the quiet community, on behalf of the community who paid $15 million to fix this facility up to make it available as a restaurant to service local and immediate guests, that they deserve a voice just as the people live, in close proximity to the Fenwick. Look, nothing has changed, sir, other than the fact that I think another 18 months of proving to be good corporate citizens that the Fenwick has seen, all the feedback from our community, which is community workers through to corporates, through everybody across the region, has been supportive of the operations. We pushed the restaurant to open up to allow more outdoor dining access because they seem to have worked within a goodwill of noise and other constraints. We want them to be able to have the view exposed without having to have the cold breeze coming off for patrons. We've looked at how they work with public transport entities to enable and encourage people to come by train, or by ferry or by bus to the site rather than parking. We haven't seen an escalation of parking issues in the region. So all I could ask is, we ought to award good behaviour by corporate citizens when it's seen, and this demonstrably has been. I would add that coming out of COVID, and the argument I made 18 months ago was that we've got to try and give Balmain its life back, that it can't simply be what's called the alienation of community space by inches, has to be measured against allegedly the celebration of Balmain, a recovery from COVID, a support for small business, a plea for some life on the peninsula for what has become a very quiet, constrained place. I don't mean back to 6 o'clock swill for the factories of the peninsula where my grandfather used to work disgorging its workers, but it does mean about let's not have this as a private enclave for the very rich local residents of Balmain East. This is a magnificent building that council determined ought to be made available to the public and for productive purpose, and invested $15 million of our money to then say you can't operate when the sun goes down, or you can't eat outside of the sun shining or it's raining, or that you can't have a window view and stop a gale force wind getting you in the face. it is a tough gig running a restaurant at the moment with staff shortages, with COVID and with constraints. I, for one, as a local resident, saying I want to share my community. I don't want to lock it up. And I think good corporate citizenship that we've seen and we've pushed the Fenwick management on ought to be rewarded by reasonable regulation to ensure this to continue. So that's all right, sir. And I'm happy to answer questions, but I probably don't think you need me to come and say the same thing for us. I'd stand down for the next session, which is similar vein. I'm not a technical contribution. So I hope that that provides some support.
Are there any questions by the panel?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
No? All right, thank you for that.
Thank you for the opportunity, Chairman.
Now, the project architect, Mr. Babikian. Is he?
I'm here. Sorry, I'm just finding the unmute button. Found it. Good afternoon, members of the panel. I submitted online just a couple of comments on this one. Just wondering if that one came through. May not have. That's okay. It's quite brief, so I can just run through it again. So I am the project architect on board for this application. We are obviously in support of council's recommendation. We've worked closely with both council planners, heritage officers, as well as state heritage council in order to get the recommendation that we are looking at today. So like I said, we are in support of all of those recommendations. There is just one condition which I request to be reworded. It's a technical issue. It would be condition 2G, which relates to, if I can just read that one out, it states to ensure the original interior layout can be interpreted, the internal partitions on the ground floor must not exceed 1350 millimetres high and must be able to be easily removed in the future when not required. As part of this application, obviously, we're seeking approval and have been recommended for approval for full height glazed airlock, which obviously occurs on the ground floor. So it would be a technical issue, but that DA condition, I guess, is in conflict with the approved plans. So we have just suggested a rewording of that application to allow for the approved plans to be upheld. So I had suggested that instead of striking that condition entirely, after the comma at 1350 millimetres high, we could insert to the effect of, unless they are of a transparent nature, or specified on the approved plans as being full height. Just to ensure that when we go to complete our construction certificate, there's no conflict between the wording of the condition and the approved plans.
All right.
And if I needed to respond to any of the objectors, I guess I could, but I'll leave that to the panel.
All right, I'll ask the panel if there's any questions.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Barry. Kath Roach here. And yes, we did get a copy of that draft condition of consent that you are looking at amending. I note that it still retains in those words, it must be easily removed in future when not required. So it's just an insert of some wording there. So thank you for that. Just can you please respond to me in relation to a point that's been raised on a couple of occasions. Sorry, I'll just go back to my particular notes in relation to it. Sorry, just bear with me one moment. I think I put it on number five rather than number four. Sorry, Mr. Chair, if you want the next person to ask a question and then I can come back, I'll just find my question again from this gentleman.
All right. Any other questions by the panel?
No, I don't have any questions of the architect. Thank you.
No, I don't either. Thank you.
There is a comment by one of the objectors relating to the size of the coffee cart.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. That's exactly what mine was around in relation to the location where they're saying if it's in the current location, the coffee can't fit in if it's extended each side. So I was wondering if you could comment in relation to that.
Yes, I'm just going to bring up that drawing just so I can refer to it myself.
And then can you advise which drawing number you're bringing up on that one? Match it as well.
Sure. So I'm looking on our architectural set A1844. On the agenda PDF, it's page 72, I think, or listed as page 147.
Thanks, Barry. I've got 1844 up. Thank you. Yep.
So, and then obviously the drawings just are back and forth in front and behind of that. So I don't see any conflict there in regards to opening up. Was the concern the side wings opening up or the roof? That's effectively the two portions that do open and enlarge, I guess, the footprint?
Right, the concerns were that if it was open in full, I take it as both side and wings, that it would not fit in the location that's currently prescribed.
Okay. In the plan.
So perhaps you could speak to that.
Sure. So I think in terms of the roof enclosure, look, that is only there to provide weather protection at end of trade, mostly, given that it's largely located underneath the overhead concrete walkway. I don't see any conflict there. The side panels that open up, looking at the drawings as they currently look like, yes, I agree, they might actually cause some conflict. So that might be a bit of a design consideration. Obviously, the cart will or is approved in that current location and will be maintained there. So that's something that we'll have to trim down. However, unfortunately, I can't see a dimension on it. I think what we may have done is on the floor plan view, that actually shows the length of the cart in the open position, because it does look a lot shorter. I think it is, yeah. It is because it's referenced from the drawings directly. So on second thought, looking at that, I don't think that there would be any conflict in that the floor plan shows it in the open location. Oh, sorry, in the open length.
Okay, so you're looking at drawing for the ground floor plan.
Yeah.
A106 is where you're saying that in that location that the full dimensions will fit in that regard.
Exactly right. So I've shown that in its open format. So yep. When it's closed up, it'll only get shorter.
Yep.
Currently shown in that plan.
Okay. Thank you for that. Thanks, Mr. Chair. That was the main concern I was querying in relation to it.
All right. Any other questions?
No, thank you.
No. All right. So that concludes all the speakers in relation to item number 4. We can then go on to the, what we will do is the panel will consider what's been put to us and publish our decision on that application in due course. So we can now move on to the second application regarding this facility, item number 5. This does not propose any physical alterations to the building, but seeks to amend some of the existing conditions. In particular, it wishes to allow the extended trading hours to continue for another 5 years, to delete a condition requiring a travel and parking survey, to delete a condition requiring bicycle parking, and to delete a condition which is superfluous. So that is the application that's now before us. And again, we have Mr. Dobby on this application.
Okay, I'd just like to add further comment to what I've spoken on regarding the last DA. Basically, from a resident's point of view, we personally applaud the bringing of additional life to the foreshore there, but we do think it's a question of balance. And another speaker there was alluding to questions of rich, ultra-rich neighbours' interests being preferred over the wider community. I think that is kind of an us and them sort of argument. I think we, as I say, we do applaud the restaurant there, and it's a wonderful facility, but they should be held to account in terms of any harassment, or not harassment, but nuisance they cause to the neighbours. And I think that's a legitimate expectation of any neighbour. In fact, I recall going back in the process to the very beginning, I believe an adaptive reuse of a heritage building, there was a condition which stated that no significant impacts on surrounding neighbours. And we would argue that the noise that we're enduring at the moment in particular is certainly a significant impact on us, our tenants and our neighbours who've all expressed similar concerns. With regard to the noise, I believe, Mr. Chair, that you mentioned that there are constraints on noise at certain hours and so forth. It's apparent that they are not being adhered to, and we'd request a condition be placed on any consent for continued trading at the Fenwick restaurant, that a positive obligation on the applicant to cease operation of the kitchen fan and any outdoor air conditioning or refrigeration plant at close of trading hours each night be imposed on them, because that's certainly not happening at the moment, and that's the subject of the Council Compliance Officer's investigation currently afoot. Our main concern in investigating and trawling through the 295-odd pages of the various DAs was, I believe, there's a refrigeration condenser which is currently within the building, which is proposed to be removed and placed outside underneath the stairs. Now, I don't know if we can refer to the architect on this particular issue, but if that were the case, our concern would be that that refrigeration for the cool room of the restaurant, the condenser would have to run 24 hours a day. I don't know if we can refer back to him and let us know whether that's the case, but that would be of major concern to residents. I think regardless of the fact that we're in a very desirable location there in Sydney, residents could and do have the legitimate expectation that they'd be treated as any other property owner anywhere else in the state, in terms of being having our interests respected by council and by any applicant who seeks to put forward such a DA. Okay, well, that's...
Excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
Yes. Thank you. All right. Any questions by the panel? No?
Sorry, Mr. Chair, through you. Mr. Dobby, Kath Roche, can you just go through the... You talked about the positive obligation in relation to the outdoor condensers and air conditioning units. Can you just say again which ones it was that you were concerned about?
Right, well, it's the actual... Which pieces of equipment in
Yeah, you said you asked for a positive obligation to be okay. Oh, yes. On the applicant, so, that particular part. I just missed all of them. Got some of them, but not all of them.
No worries. Okay, so our current concern is the kitchen exhaust fan.
Yes, but yep.
With the proposed siting of outdoor air conditioning and refrigeration condensers outside the building underneath the stairs, we would ask that such a positive obligation in any condition be placed on the applicant for continued trading under the trial period, includes that item, just to ensure that people can get a good night's sleep, basically. You know, we've had people, our tenants were constantly at us to follow this up with council, and in the end they left because it was all too much for them. So my job here today as the resident is to get the best outcome, a balance hopefully between the interests of all parties.
Thanks, Mr. Dobby. I appreciate you going back over those once again for me. Back to you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? All right. Now, Mr. Saunders, I think you wish to speak on this application. I hope we haven't lost Mr. Saunders again.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do want to speak on the extension of trading hours. As you know, a trial was approved back in December 2020 for 12 months on the condition that surveys of the parking in particular in the immediate area, about 300 metres from the restaurant, would be undertaken at regular intervals. In fact, the council specified there would be six over a 12-month period. Now, I know COVID has come and gone, hopefully gone, and the restaurant did not trade continuously through that period, but it was trading as a normal restaurant for quite a few months. Not one of those surveys was undertaken by Fenix, not one out of six that was prescribed. In addition, on giving the approval for the 12-month trial, the panel said that not only do they need to do surveys of the immediate parking, they needed to do modal surveys of people coming and going at the restaurant. Well, they've done some of that in their submission, but it was hardly scientific. It didn't say whether people were coming at what time of day or evening. There was no indication day of the week. All of that is very important if you're a resident within 300 metres of that restaurant and you were trying to find a parking spot, particularly at night when it's raining and you've got some kids in the back or grandkids in the back. And it's okay to talk about Fenwick being a good corporate citizen, but for many of us, that's not been our experience. The fact that they can ignore a clear direction by the panel to do surveys, it clearly means they don't really care. And if the recommendation is to extend the trial and have more surveys, what requirement is there of Fenix to comply yet again? Will we just get 18 months down the track and they say, oh, sorry, didn't have time? Where is the compliance? I don't understand why council has not been on their case to say, where are the surveys? Where's the survey data? And what confidence do you have, if you approve this, of them doing any surveys? So that's a question. My main concern is simply that they won't comply and will end up going around the circle all the time.
All right. Any questions by the panel?
Yes, Mr. Saunders, Marilyn Taylor here. Yes. I'm wondering if you've seen in item 5 that there's a condition regarding the plan of management to be imposed by the council, saying that in the next 18 months there's to be a proper study of a qualified, certified traffic surveyor to correlate the impacts of the demand on parking and parking availability, etc. It's condition 12E on page 394 of my report. I don't wonder if you'd seen that.
I have seen that. My objection here is that they won't comply, and I would like to know, given their track record, how they will be required to comply. Not that you might state it's a requirement of approval, but how do you know they're going to do that? And what happens in 18 months' time? We're back here again. They haven't done the surveys that have been required. What do you do? Automatically say, shut up, no more trading?
Well, just an observation, this condition requires that the survey be carried out by qualified and certified traffic surveyor, not by the restaurant people.
Well, that was the condition of the first approval. The first trial suggested or said there had to be external surveys of 300 metres from the restaurant done six times over a 12-month period. None were done. So my question is, even though you're making this a requirement of approval, if the restaurant ignores you again, where is the compliance?
All right. Is there anything else you wish to say?
No, only that we have experienced parking difficulty at night and during the day. I mean, this is part of living where we live, but we don't think that Fenix have made really any effort to make that any easier for people. And if there's going to be another trial, I think if you can get those surveys undertaken, it will certainly demonstrate what the impact is. I would note that before the first trial was approved, council traffic engineers did not recommend doing even the first trial of 12 months. They specifically said this should not be done. There's no room to allow more cars to park at that place.
Right. Any other questions by the panel?
No, thank you.
All right. If not, Mr. Brown, you have registered to speak on this one also. Do you wish to add to what you've said earlier?
Thank you, Chairman. I said I don't want to take much of the panel's time. My argument wasn't specific, other than just to commend the fact that the trial was done. It's been proved correct. We do trial. It'll let these people get on with delivering a quality product, and let's get out of their face, because the community loves this facility and they paid for it. So I'll leave it to the committee, to the panel to decide at that point.
Mr. Chair, Mary Lynn Taylor here. Are we going to hear from the applicant or somebody running the restaurant?
Well, no one is registered to speak of other than the architect, Mr. Babikian. Mr. Babikian, are you, Mr. Babikian?
I'm here. I do believe that the restaurant operator is on the call as well, and I thought that he was actually registered to speak, but may not have in the end. But I wish to also address the panel as well in the meantime.
Yes, well, you proceed.
Excellent, thank you. So I guess before I get into what I was actually going to be speaking about, which is also something that I've sent through previously, just in regards to some of the others that have spoken. First of all, in regards to the current, I guess, noise emissions or concerns around that, that's obviously not subject to either of these applications currently in front of the panel today. I'd also just point out to those objectors that I think the current noise, as I understand it, I'm not aware of it, is being generated from the exhaust fan to the kitchen. That was, whilst it's obviously being maintained by the current operators, was part of the base build undertaken by council directly. So I think it's a separate issue to potentially what is being asked for within the first application, not this current one, on this item agenda. So I think we do need to separate those two issues. There are safeguards in place by way of the air conditions to ensure that the proposed condensers are monitored and noise levels are within appropriate levels. So that's all I have to say there. In regards to the extended trading hours, obviously we had applied to make these permanent or 5 years. Council have suggested to extend it by 18 months. We are concerned about that. So council have suggested to go to 18 months due to COVID restrictions over the course of the last 12 months or so. Our concern there is twofold. First of all, that the application took 5 months to be assessed and be brought in front of the panel. So it's a quite a lengthy process to go through to undertake another extension in another 18 months time, given that the first has taken 5 months. I'd also like to clarify that as far as I am aware, the operators of the Fenwick have abided by the previous conditions of consent. The obligations to undertake surveys were noted in the plan of management. Traffic studies were prepared as part of the original application for extended trading hours. I don't think that we have fallen short, or I guess my client and the operator has fallen short of any of those obligations. And this current recommendation for an 18-month extension obviously has condition 12E in place at the moment as well, which is quite onerous to undertake. So I would ask the panel to, I guess, reconsider that. My position on this is for the last 12 months through COVID, the operators of the Fenwick have done an outstanding job.
Sorry, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
No, we wish to hear you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair. The operators of the Fenwick have done an outstanding job to, I guess, pull through and reactivate the area down there along the peninsula. We're trying to, I guess, promote the business and open up the foreshore area by putting in these hold points every 12 months or 18 months. Effectively means that 6 months out from the end of those trial periods, we would have had to have lodged an application to ensure that we're not in breach. That is going to be an ongoing concern constantly for this operator, for a small little restaurant down by the water. So our position is that over the last 12 months, we have complied with the previous conditions of consent as best as we possibly could under the conditions that were about at the time. And we ask council or the panel to reconsider condition 12E and 55B and extend the trading hours as they have been for the last 12 months for a further 5 years.
Any questions, panel?
Yes, Mr. Babikian, I wonder what knowledge you have of the traffic survey that has been carried out in the last period of time. Were you part of it? Did you read it? Do you know about it?
No, so it was undertaken by obviously survey within the restaurant, and that were the terms of the plan of management at the time. Looking at that now, I guess, you know, one could interpret it any number of ways. Now the condition being 12E is for a independent traffic engineer to undertake that same data collection. Obviously, different means and a little bit more controlled potentially than was undertaken in the restaurant. But at the time we saw no, I guess, visual increase in traffic in the area. When I say we, sorry, I mean the operators of the Fenwick.
So you're telling me that the operators of the restaurant were doing the survey of the at the same time as they're running the restaurant?
Yeah, so as people were coming in to have lunch or dinner, undertaking the survey at that time. And that has been supplied as part of this application.
Mr. Chair, I registered to speak, but obviously didn't get registered. I'm the owner of the business.
All right. I'll wait until all questions of Mr. Babikian have been asked. Are there any further questions of Mr. Babikian?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
All right.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, as Mr. Babikian was allotted more time, in terms of procedural fairness, is there an opportunity to respond to some of the issues that he raised?
Well, no, the reason he was granted more time because the panel wanted more understanding of the applicant's proposal.
Yes.
That's why I allowed him an extra few minutes.
Right. See, I just raised the issues of the refrigeration condensers, whether they were to be run 24 hours a day outside the building. In my talk to the panel, they weren't addressed. And I think with respect, the issue of existing noise goes to context. To take a blinkered approach regarding the existing noise complaint before council and to say that's not relevant to additional noise impact on residents, I think that just doesn't wash in my opinion. I'd like to know, I'd like to hear if possible his thoughts on whether the refrigeration condenser will be running 24 hours a day outside the building. And is this the same refrigeration condenser that is currently running within the building? Is it going to be relocated?
All right, that's a fair question. Mr. Babikian.
Happy to respond. Of course, the refrigeration condenser will be run 24/7. The fridges and freezer can't be turned off overnight. The existing condenser located inside will likely be replaced.
So there's going to be two condensers, one inside and one outside?
No, just one outside. Sorry, is there a concern with the one inside?
Well, the concern is that the noise-emitting plant, which is currently working inside the building, which would have less of an impact on neighbouring properties, is now going to be moved outside and be running 24/7.
Yeah, so the issue, I'll try and explain it quite briefly. The issue with the location of the existing fridge condensers are located internally is that they have been located within a largely unventilated room. Condensers produce, you know, reasonable amounts of heat. So the operators at the Fenwick have now gone through quite a few of those condensers. And I guess potentially that's just a within the original design years and years ago, maybe it should have been considered and placed elsewhere. But I guess given that we are where we are now undertaking that sort of redesign process now. And I'd like to point out that we have supplied an acoustic report in support of. We've included acoustic panels all sides of the new location underneath the stairs. And we've also located it in conjunction with advice that we've received by Council and by Heritage New South Wales.
Well, I would dispute that because that acoustic report actually states that monitoring has been done directly at our premises for an extended period. No permission was sought or consent given to put any monitoring equipment on our premises.
If you read the acoustic report, you'll see the locations of the monitors that were noted. That is noted in the report. And
yes.
No, we don't need to put it on your property.
At our address. One of them was specifically at our address. And yet no consent and no consent was sought to place such equipment in our...
Yeah, I guess I don't want to get into a little situation here. The report notes where those locations were and that evidence has been provided through to Council.
Come back to the panel with the statement whether it was actually placed on our premises as noted in the report, because it certainly wasn't to our knowledge.
Well, the noise measurements are taken at the property boundary, so they don't have to actually go onto your property to take the noise measurements.
I believe they've done over a certain period of time, so it's not as though they're just one man standing at the boundary for a momentary. It is, I think, over an extended period of hours or days even.
I can clarify, Chair, if you'd like.
Yes, please.
So thank you, Chair. Like you said, it is not located within private property. It's located along the property boundary. And it would have been secured to either a wall or a signpost or similar. And yes, it would have been maintained there over a number of days, which is stipulated within the report.
Not to our knowledge. And we own the wall and the fence.
You would not notice it unless you were looking specifically for it. It's not a large device that gets put up there.
All right.
Because they usually get knocked off, unfortunately.
Right.
Well, now I think we need to hear from the operator of the facility.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, sorry. I thought I had registered. I believe I had, and I got confirmation. But if I can go through a number of points in my 3 minutes, if I may speak firstly about the umbrellas and the suggestion that we're increasing our footprint, that we already have the permission to have the tables out there. And by putting umbrellas there, we're just protecting elderly and the infants when they want to dine there, that they're not subject to the sun. So that I think that was quite a basic one. And we are not looking to extend our footprint by just shading those who decide to have it, whether it be a coffee or a glass of wine. So that was my first point. With regards to the noise from the exhaust hood, I've only first heard about that last Thursday, I think it was, from Council. I mean, not that I would want to run an exhaust hood overnight, to disrupt our neighbours, but it does not sound logical for any business person to run an exhaust hood 24 hours a day. And to be honest, the first, and we've been trading for a couple of years, that's the first I've ever heard anything about that. And it was just a week before this meeting. And obviously it's a meeting I had with our chef this morning to ensure that we're not wasting electricity and disturbing neighbours by leaving it on overnight. So I was shocked that it was, and if it was, it shouldn't be. So that was the exhaust hood. With the surveys for the parking, we've been running internal surveys every year, and it's part of a manager's shift report at the end of the night, and they were asked to check with every table that had arrived how many people walked there, how many people got an Uber or a taxi, how many people came by ferry or bus, and how many people drove there. And if I'm not mistaken, it should be part of that submission. In the on again, off again year of COVID that we've somehow survived through, with regards to the evening trading, we've become a very popular venue with locals that that are really starved for choice to be able to dine at a venue which I'm proud to say of our caliber in the area. Most of our clientele are locals, the vast majority, and they now are showing the place off to people from out of town, and I suspect in the near enough future from international guests. But we've had overwhelming support by the greater community to be able to trade at night. Very, very proud and humbled for that, and would like to think that we'll be able to continue. We take our corporate responsibility very seriously, and if we have done anything wrong, we always look to improve. I mean, that's one of the reasons why you stay in business. So I'm grateful for the recommendations put forward. I do hope that we don't have to have just an 18 months and that we don't have to go through this process again, but we're in your hands, obviously. And we're very happy to be in Balmain. We want to stay in Balmain and want to be able to serve the community of Balmain as we have been for the last couple of years, and hopefully in a COVID-free state, or at least a COVID-affected state that we can all live with.
Right, questions by the panel. Mrs. Taylor.
Yes, I know that there's a plan of management that says you're doing all sorts of things about trying to tell people about the alternative ways of getting to the restaurant otherwise than bringing a car and parking it. And I understand that that is probably a very good idea. And I wondered if your activities could also include perhaps the installation of a taxi phone. Do they do that sort of thing in your area?
No, look, in the 40-odd years that I've been in business, taxis are obsolete now, to be honest. I remember in my early years in hospitality, at 3 o'clock, it'd be impossible to get a cab because it was that changeover at the time, and the same again at 11 o'clock. People now have, most of us, I'm guessing, that are at today's meeting, have got an Uber app on their phone. They're finishing their coffee, they order an Uber. The on your app, it tells you whether it's 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes away, which actually adds to the convenience, not just for the diner, but also for the neighbours. People aren't loitering out. They're staying, having their last beverage or whatever until their Uber comes. That's for most people. Taxis are sort of not as popular as they once were. Obviously, Uber's taken over. Commercially, it suits us for people not to drive, because those that drive, they've got to be very careful with what they drink, whereas those that come by public transport can indulge a bit more. So apart from the parking concerns that anybody may have, we have another motive to not have people drive. It suits us for people to either walk there or come by public transport. They can indulge that bit more.
And do I take it, do you have a website or some such thing?
Yes.
And is there anything placed on the website that says about the unavailability of local parking and the recommendation to use bus, ferry or Uber? And we can do that be done?
I'm not sure if I've got it on the Fenwick. I've got it on many of my sites, but I'd have to check. But it suits us to do that. And if it's not on there at the moment, I'd be happy to have it installed this afternoon. It's a normal thing to do. And when people do make inquiries, it's a standard thing that our telephonists would say to guests.
Thank you. That was my question.
Yes, I've got a couple of questions, if I may, please, David. With the umbrellas, are they to be permanently installed?
No, we're not allowed to have them permanently installed. When we spoke with Heritage Council, they said you can have the umbrellas. The issue was, we were getting aged people sitting there and it was blistering hot, and they said, oh, you can't have them. And then it just wasn't logical. And then they came back and said, no, that's fine, have the umbrellas, but they need to be put away at night, which we do now anyway. So Yeah, we're permitted the umbrellas that we've got there now. I believe it's six. Pretty sure it's six. And then at the end of the night, they just get taken away and put inside.
Right. And with the coffee cart, is that left outside at night time?
Yes.
And so what are the proposed hours of operation of the coffee cart?
Coffee carts usually close late in the afternoon. If somebody comes for a coffee, if a fisherman comes for a coffee at 8 or 9 o'clock, we just serve it from the restaurant because it'd only be the one off. But it's that morning lunch trade. And if I may take the opportunity to say one more thing, you will notice, and if you check with council, vandalism has gone down to zero since we started trading evenings. Where the toilets were constantly being torn apart, we have not had that problem since we've started trading evenings because those who like to do that sort of thing, there's no point in doing it there. It's been pushed along. So that's a positive byproduct of us trading in the evenings.
Good. Thank you very much. Thank you, David.
All right. Any other questions?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just also on the plan of management, in terms of noise abatement and noise emission issues, and whilst I recognise that that's not part of what we compliance issues associated with that are not what we need to go through today, but as part of the noise emission controls are already in the plan of management, be giving consideration to ensuring that that kitchen exhaust fan, which you said you only found out about last Thursday, I think you said it was, is to be turned off at the closure of the food and drinks premises when it's closed. So that's got to go off as well. And if the air conditioning condenses through outside, it would similarly be the same, obviously for you, obviously saving electricity, but at the same time, it's the noise abatement issues that cause issues. So that would also be considered as being part of the plan of management, which you're required to let all the staff know in relation to all those conditions. So it's just another switch that's all got to get flicked off at the end of the day.
Sure. Happy to put it on a timer even, but certainly, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Right. Any other questions?
No, thank you.
All right. So that concludes the submissions in relation to that matter. And as with the previous one, we will consider what's been put to us and publish our decision in due course. So with that, we can now move on to item number 6, Callan Park. There are two applications in relation to Callan Park, item 6 and item 7. Item 6 refers to the refurbishment of two existing buildings 497 and 512. These are physical works to those two buildings. And that is what item 6 relates to. Item 7 relates to other matters which we'll come to in due course. So in relation to item 6, we have a number of speakers. Firstly, Mr. Paul Power.
I'll speak to item 7. And Carl Allen, my colleague, will speak to item 6.
All right, thank you for that.
Thank you.
Carol Allen, then, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon, panel members and community. I'm referring to the... I'm representing Friends of Callan Park this afternoon, and I'm referring to your DA document, and I'll look at a couple of page numbers. First of all, page 595.
Yes.
Parking at building 497, that's the community building on Waterfront Oval. The building capacity is 200 persons, and we strongly suggest a minimum of 2 disability car spaces adjacent to the building. I notice there's a kiss and ride option, but any other parking is at a distance. So you may consider that, please. Now referring to page 599.
Yes.
Attachment A, recommended conditions of consent. One of them is 3, the photographic recording on page 2.
Yes.
The entire interior of this building should be photographed as it has many historical references. Douglas Grant, an Aboriginal man, designed the adjacent Sydney Harbour Bridge War Memorial that most of you know, while he was repatriating there after World War I from internment in a German prison camp. So that is an historic building. Number 14 of that recommended conditions of consent is the traffic and parking assessment and management on page 5 of the conditions of consent. Refurbishing of the building will allow a capacity of 200, plus the cane room opposite that we're considering today will have a maximum of 70 persons, and that will attract increased traffic in that area. We want to suggest this study is completed with expediency to allow development of an efficient and safe whole of site plan for Cullen Park for parking. Otherwise, the vehicles will, as seen before and during the pandemic, park randomly all over the heritage list of Cullen Park. So parking in the whole of that Cullen Park needs to be better managed, and this will help this traffic plan. So this is vital, the traffic plan. And now referring to page 622.
Yes.
Okay. Building 512, which is known as the Cane Room on Waterfront Green. The boardwalks will be constructed around the building. However, there are no plans indicating the extent or size of these boardwalks, and they're actually outside the permitted footprint allowable under the Cullen Park Special Provisions Act 2002. So these plans should be available to see the size and extent of these boardwalks before approval of this DA. So
your excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
Yep, your consideration is appreciated for that, please.
All right, so that's your 3 minutes.
Yes, thank you.
Now, we do have representatives of the applicant here. Do any of you wish to speak on this application? We have Megan Parker, Steve Curran, and Sarah Cameron.
Hello, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me? It's Sarah Cameron speaking.
Yes, but we can't see you.
Okay, I'll turn my camera on. Just hold on a moment. Good afternoon.
Now we can see you.
Thank you. Just a short statement about this very important DA for Cullen Park. Greater Sydney Parklands is proposing this DA as it has significant community benefit in the adaptive reuse of two currently underutilised government assets, one for a community and sporting facility that will service the needs of the local community. Both Inner West Council and several local sporting groups who currently use sporting fields in Cullen Park support this application. In addition, one of the buildings, Building 497, is subject to an expression of interest process by Greater Sydney Parklands for a suitable tenant that will comply with the Cullen Park Act. We feel that this will be a really positive benefit for the community, and it will be the start of a rolling program of adaptive reuse of heritage assets within Cullen Park. I'd also add that there are various car parks in Cullen Park currently utilised and available for the community. One of these is at Balmain Road. There are at least 200 car parks for vehicles here. One is at the back of Kirkbride. Again, there are another at least 100 car parks in that location. And Greater Sydney Parklands is also bringing forward the construction of another car park to service the sports fields at the end of Wharf Road. And that DA is imminent. Thank you. I'll also hand over to my colleague, Steve Quirin, who's going to talk about one of the conditions of this DA.
All right, do you have anything to say, I'm sorry, do you have anything to say about the cane building and the non-indication of the extent of the boardwalk on the plans as raised by Miss Allen?
Sorry, I think it's just replacing existing boardwalk that's already in place. So I don't believe that there is an encroachment outside of the footprint of that existing building.
All right. Any questions by the panel?
Just one question. So Sarah, what's your role with this application?
I act on behalf of Greater Sydney Parklands, so I'm the proponent, the client, and the proponent of this application. So I am deeply involved in the application and its preparation.
Excellent. So just one loop I want to close, just so that I am across exactly why it's been said. Why is this application not integrated development?
It was to be integrated development, but due to some changes that needed to be made, it will be a standalone DA. Once we've received a DA consent, we will then lodge an application for Section 60 with the Heritage Council. It was just a quirk of the way that the DA assessment progressed. That's all I can really answer on that one. I'd have to take that on notice a bit further, but that's my understanding, Brian.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Can I just ask a question? Sarah, are you a town planner?
No, I'm not.
Right.
Through you, Mr. Chair, just a question for Sarah as well. Thanks, Sarah, for that. That was important to hear. Can you please comment, one of our previous speakers talked about the request for two adjacent car spaces next to building B497. Do you have a comment in relation to that?
Yes, it is certainly intended to provide two disabled car spaces adjacent to building 497, as well as two loading docks. They're not part of this application because there's no landscaping proposed. They are part of the Wharf Road car park application, the extent of which includes revised roadway access and revised footways and revised disability access into 497, including the provision of two disability car parks and a kiss and ride drop-off for people to drop off sport and equipment and children without having to park for long periods.
Thanks, Sarah. That's what I thought. So it's part of the other application. Thank you.
All right. No other questions?
Yeah. Chair, can I ask a question, please?
Well, it depends what it is.
It's just in regard to the statement about the car parking.
Yes.
I was asking about some parking adjacent to 497, not across the road at the new proposed car park near the refugee centre. So are those disability spaces going to be adjacent and very close to 497? Sarah?
That's correct. They will be adjacent to 497. And then there will be additional disability accessible car parking in the new car park as well, in addition to the two car parks.
We weren't asking about that, just at the 497. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Quirin.
Hi. Firstly, can you hear me?
Yes, but we can't see you.
Yeah, so I'm very low sort of bandwidth here, so I'll keep it to no video, if that's okay.
Yes, proceed.
So my name's Stephen Crean. I'm from Q Consulting. So we're the town planners assisting the Great Western Sydney Parkland. So we'll firstly state that we're happy with the conditions, but there's one condition with condition 31 that we request to be amended, and that should have been forwarded to you as the amended condition that's been accepted by council's health officer. What that condition basically is allowing is for any community operators to provide any sort of food for fundraising activities without the need of continuously going back to council for health licenses as such, only at one point in time. If they have type of food that is hazardous in any manner, then they do then go off to get a health license per se. But that condition provides a bit more flexibility for the operator. Right. Just with that. Sorry, did you get that?
Are there any questions on that particular item?
Yes, I'd like to know. I'd like to know what the condition now says.
Thanks. That's my same question as well, Mr. Curran. I don't seem to have that particular condition that you're referring to. As I know the condition it is, but what you're amending to, I don't seem to have that. So can you just read that out for me?
Okay, let me just grab a... No, I was confirmed by the secretary that she had passed it on just for a moment.
And okay. Mr. Curran, she may have. I just can't locate it right at this minute.
Okay, the condition reads, condition 31, the premises do not need to notify council as they are not a for-profit organisation. All fundraising events at which only food that is not potentially hazardous or is to be consumed immediately after thorough cooking are to be sold. Basic hygiene and food safety requirements are to be followed as outlined in the Food Standards Australia, New Zealand.
Thank you.
Thanks for that. Mr. Chair, we might just get the Minutes Secretariat to forward that on when she has a moment, please. Thank you.
Right. And just another matter, just regarding the paved area for building 512, if my understanding is correct from the objector. In this application, there's no paving or paved area outside bar a disabled access to the building, disabled access ramp. And that's on page 623 of your agenda.
Thank you. Yes, I see that. All right. Do you have anything else to say, Mr. Quirin?
No, that's fine. Thanks.
Any other questions of Mr. Quirin?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Chair. Just, Mr. Quirin, can you shed some light on why this application's not integrated development, just so that I'm clear on that?
It's basically timing. We've got an expression of interest program at the same time. And the heritage approval, we need to get this sort of approved as such as a DA, and then we'll move on to the heritage Section 60 approval process. We have had engagement by heritage consultants in the preparation of these documentations. There is no items of any issue as such. It's purely a very basic DA in terms of maintenance works and refurbishing the building to get up to a standard for an operator to move in efficiently.
Okay, thank you.
All right, I see Miss Allen has put her hand up.
Sorry, I've been nuisance. A very quick question on in condition 31, which I haven't seen. What is it going to be catered food or cooked food cooked within the building that you're referring to?
It's allowing for both. For predominantly, it's going to be packaged foods. That's normally the case for community operators. But we need to allow some flexibility for community operators to allow the cooking of food if that's the case for any fundraising activities.
So that
it's not going to be a cafe, restaurant. It's purely for that community operator.
They can cook food there. That's what I was referring to. Okay.
Yeah, they can potentially cook food. Yes, that's
Thank
correct.
You. Thank you.
I'll just add to that it's only to be confined to preparation of sandwiches and barbecues.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. That sounded like Sarah.
Right.
Are you going to specify that? Is that going to be specified in the conditions?
No, it doesn't need to be. The condition covers it.
Thank you.
All right. Does Megan Parker wish to add anything?
No, Chair. I speak on behalf of Megan today as well. Thank you.
Okay, good. All right. Well, they are all the speakers on that matter. As with the Western Street matters, we will consider what's been put to us and publish our decision in due course. So we can then move on to item number 7. This is the second application relating to Cullen Park. And this effectively involves tidying up where two buildings have been removed with consent and effectively tidying up that area. Now, Mr. Power. Mr. Power.
Okay. Hi. Good afternoon. My name is Paul Power, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Friends of Cullen Park. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak to this development application. It is surprising and disappointing that the updated plans have not been made available to properly consider the changes. Heritage New South Wales removed a massive mound, which was the centerpiece of this plan. To date, we have no viewing of any new updated plan. It is reasonable to request these. Otherwise, the process lacks transparency. And also, as Cullen Park is a major community resource for both passive and active enjoyment, it is disappointing that only the immediate perimeter residents are notified of any development application. All major community stakeholders should always be notified. That's just a preamble. So moving on, please refer to 695. I might run out of references to pages because I've only got 3 minutes, so we might avoid going to pages. I'll just call out the page number for notes. Item 11, details to be submitted for approval by the Heritage Council and their A, B, and C. A, details of a sandstone garden on the southern part of the site indicating the relationship with the existing sandstone outcrops. B, further details of planting and the relationship with open view lines to the waterfront. And C, details of a revised treatment of the pre-colonial headland mound that better respond to the topography of the site, in-ground planting or some other low-scale treatment. Reasons? Limited details have been provided by the applicant. Further details are required to allow impacts to be adequately assessed and to ensure impact to significant landscape and spatial qualities are minimized and that works are reversible. So we at Friends of Cullen Park, the Heritage New South Wales have asked for details, they've submitted for approval on the redesigned waterfront green without the mound. And considering A, B, and C above, ABC believe these should be available to the community before final approval. You will see waterfront green is a small space squeezed between two large sporting ovals and the Bayron dominating Iron Cove foreshore. Our community expectation was that waterfront green refurbishment would be at long last create an opportunity for toddlers, picnickers, old folk to also enjoy closer passive foreshore access. So it is surprising and seems discriminatory that this design has created a busy thoroughfare crisscrossed by hard paths, cycle access to from the Bayron and a formal or informal thoroughfare between two ovals.
That's 3 minutes, Chair. Excuse me.
It's a long DA. I've got about half, I'm halfway there.
You can have another minute.
Extension of time?
1 minute.
Okay, read on. The staircase. Will impact trees and proposed location will be a serious health and safety hazard below the football goalposts and baseball pitches, plus users ascending the steps are not aware of oncoming overhead balls. Will encourage sports players to walk across waterfront green to waterfront oval, we thoroughly recommend the steps be moved to the southwest of the end of the playing field where steps would not be required and pedestrians can walk directly down existing military drive to the refurbished community building 497 on Waterfront Oval. The cycle joggers, pedestrians access between Wharf Road Extension and the Bay Run will impact passive foreshore enjoyment as cyclists already have multiple access ways between the Bay Run via Military Drive, Waterfront Drive, Glover Street. It seems discriminatory again to interrupt carefree foreshore users by toddlers, old folks and picnickers. There is no cycleway across any of the ovals in the Bay Run to the Bay Run. And why should this, why should there be across the finite passive space?
Sorry, Chair, that's an extra minute.
All right, Mr. Power, you've had an extra minute. I think we'll allow the applicant to respond to what you've said, but before we do that, we should hear from Louisa Larkin. Is Louisa Larkin there, please?
Hi, can you hear me all right?
Yes, you have.
Hello.
Three.
Yeah. So I'm the director of Callan Park Dog Lovers, and thank you for letting me speak today. I'm actually not speaking about dogs at all. I actually want to just raise a concern that the Callan Park loving community has about trees and wildlife, and just want to raise just a few queries about that, and I'm going to be very quick. So we welcome the council's and the planner's stipulation that additional trees must be planted over and above those initially included on the plan. We would, however, like to ask the council to ensure that the choice of the new trees will provide a habitat for the wildlife that Callan Park users value so highly. I don't know whether you know, but Callan Park is home to some power owls. That's very special. We have a whole variety of species, animals and birds, a lot of possums and other wildlife. These creatures will be displaced when the 23 trees or groups of trees are to be removed. And we understand why they need to be removed. But what we want to ask is that when the new trees are considered, it's important to think about how possums use the tree canopy. It's really important for possums to stay up in the canopy. When they come down, that's when they're vulnerable. That's when they get hit by cars or they get into trouble. So we're trying to encourage the group today to think about the impact that this is going to have on the beautiful wildlife, which is part of what makes Callan Park so very, very special. So we'd like to ask you to provide a canopy pathway for possums when you're considering how you plant and where you plant the new trees, and also to ensure that the species are good for wildlife habitat. And finally, just to be very quick, I would suggest, and I don't know whether you've already done this, and I'm not speaking for WIRES, but WIRES would be a great source of information on what would be great habitats to protect and grow the wonderful wildlife in Callan Park in the area that we're discussing. And that's it. Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate you listening.
All right. Any questions, panel?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
All right. Mr. Mark Tyrrell, please.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Yes.
I don't have too many responses other than to say that we've been asked to provide these 18 new canopy trees and we will ensure that they have habitat benefits to them. Whether or not powerful owls and possums can coexist harmoniously, I'm not sure. I think a powerful owl eats a possum a night, but we'll try and support both of those as we can with those trees. In terms of the other requirements, we've been asked to shift the access stairs south, and we'll be doing that to avoid some of the trees that are there that was mentioned, I think, by Paul there to move things south. And we've also been asked to remediate the site in accordance with the Cardano RAP remediation action plan, which has been accredited by the, audited and approved by the independent EPA auditor. So in terms of the additional works that were mentioned to the sandstone garden, to the details of planting and to the revised treatment of the headland interpretation, that is a process that's being undertaken through this Section 60 with the Heritage Committee, and it's in progress. So whether how transparent that is, I suppose, a question for the Heritage Committee and Council panel. But those details are all taking place through that process at present. And there have been a couple of presentations to the Heritage Committee on those items.
Questions by the panel?
Mr. Matu, I'm interested in about the philosophy of the trees in the park. Is it the philosophy to return to the park the original trees that came at the time of settlement, white settlement, or at some other period of time? Or are we trying to turn the park into a sort of a wildlife habitat, or do both things go together?
Thank you. Both things go together in all parks. It's a significant park. It's going to be a significant habitat patch, as well as being significant for recreation at a regional level. And so native vegetation is very important to us. Connecting that native vegetation is important. A shrub and grassland layer is as important as canopy, and canopy is really important for bird species, but also for shade. And so all of these things have to be and are being considered together. In terms of whether or not they're the trees that were planted in the past or not, we're generally using a palette of native trees, and there is a preference for particular trees that tell Indigenous stories that have been subject to the Heritage Council's advice on what sort of stories can be communicated through the vegetation that's planted on the site.
Thank you.
Panel, any other questions?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
All right. Is Mr. Owen there, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, can you see me?
Yeah, I can see you, Josh. Mr. Chair, Josh is there and online. Josh, you just might need to speak up a little bit. You were just quiet then.
No worries. Look, I really have nothing more to add than what Mark's just gone through. We're here to answer questions today as the panel has them. But really, just from my end to round out, that there's been very extensive consultation on not only this application, but the landscape structure plan, which underpins the rollout of DAs that the Greater Sydney Parklands are delivering across Callan Park. That's extending to consultation, regular consultation with council, with the relevant state agencies, obviously Heritage being the main one, and the special community groups that we have. And we very much appreciate the feedback and ongoing comments that we're getting, particularly from the community. And we've done a lot of workshops with the community groups to revise this particular plan over the course of, I think, the last 11 or 12 months now. The conditions are capturing those, I suppose, final refinements that we still need to make. So obviously the mound being the most significant. And we've done a lot of work in reviewing those conditions and liaising with council and Heritage to make sure that we're going to be giving Heritage, in particular, all of the upgrades that they need as part of this Section 60 application. It's my understanding, too, that it will be a major works Section 60, so it's likely to be re-notified as public exhibition process anyway. So there may be additional opportunities for the community groups to provide further feedback as the plans are refined, particularly around the mound.
We'd like that.
All right. Questions by the panel?
No questions.
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
All right. Thank you for that.
Chair, can I just ask one question? Marcus Tyrrell has said that they're going to move the access stairs further to the south. That's what we're asking, because it's crucial, the positioning of those stairs. And further to the south is so vague because we have no idea where they're going to be. They should not be. You don't even need the steps if it's the other side of one building. Instead of the front of the building, it should be the back of the building. It's not very long, but we need to know where they're going to put those steps. That's right. Really crucial, because otherwise people will just walk straight into that passive area.
All right. Is there an answer to that question?
Sorry, I was just quoting the requirement to shift them south, and I think that was to avoid some trees that are there. So I can go and have a look at that again, but that was the requirement. It wasn't a question of removing the stair. The stair has support of people who use the playing fields and don't have an amenities block at the moment. And as part of this development, that stair will form the link between those two terraces, so the upper level of the sports field and the amenities within this development.
It will be a very steep step and stairs, and they'll be falling down it. Balls will hit them. If they were the other side of the building, you may not even need any steps. And also, it wouldn't be dangerous, and it wouldn't be crisscrossing a passive area. So I'm curious why we need to put them there.
Just simply that they will be consistent with Australian standards. They will also provide the required sight lines that are required for safety and design in terms of a direct connection to this amenities building. There are considerations like that that have gone into the positioning of that stair.
So the kids can't walk the other end of the building to go to the toilet, to go around to the toilet? I can't understand why.
Well, I think you've made your point, Ms. Allen.
Thank you. I'm sorry to argue with
point. No, you've put your point very, very forcefully, and we'll take that on board.
Thank you.
Okay, so that concludes Callan Park, and we will, as with the earlier application, consider the matter and publish our decisions in due course. And with that, we can move on to item number 8. Item number 8 is 88 Evans Street, Roselle.
Am I up mute?
Now, I'm sorry? We're now dealing with item number 8, 88 Evans Street, Roselle. All right. We have two speakers there, I think, three speakers. So, firstly, Mr. Hill.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Yep. We can see you, though.
Okay, thank you. I'm the owner of 90 Evans Street, which borders 88 Evans Street on the south side.
Yes.
I previously registered an objection relating to the impact on the light well in my house. In that objection, I raised two concerns. The first concern was related to solar access. That concern was actually was addressed in the assessment, and I accept the outcome there. However, I don't believe my second and probably more pressing concern was properly addressed in the assessment. That concern is that the proposed glass block panel on the south wall is positioned directly in front of our light well window, so that internal lighting from inside 88 Evans Street will shine directly into our light well. This light well faces onto our bedrooms and living areas, so I'm concerned about the impact to those rooms at nighttime when there are lights turned on in 88 Evans Street. That second part of my objection was mentioned in the assessment, but I can't see any specific response to it there. The existing response seems to only address the solar access aspect. So I ask that this nighttime lighting issue is considered and responded to before approving the proposal. Thank you for your consideration.
All right. Any questions by the panel?
No, thank you.
All right. So I think we should hear from the applicant. Who wishes to speak? We have Mr. Madden and Mr. Cox. Mr. Cox is the owner. Mr. Madden, what's your role?
Can you hear me, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Yes, I am the applicant and the architect for the project, and I just wish to discuss just a few small factors. Firstly, it's a very small and very constrained site, and being so, the opportunities to do anything except a very limited solution is very, very difficult. We believe that we have come up with a considerable amount of consultation with the council, a compromise solution which best addresses the limitations of that particular site. With respect to the light well, the fact is that there is a glass panel which is erected on the next door neighbour's property, number 90, which is directly on the boundary, which is not in compliance with the Code of Australia. So in fact, it should be actually ignored. Only two other small factors. The parking requirement is shown and clearly indicated on 151A, outdrawing 151A, and it is in full compliance with the parking code. There's considerable amount of detail on that drawing. It seems that the engineers just simply want a drawing which is 1 to 25, and I think that's absolutely unnecessary these days. You can actually just blow that up and see the drawings quite clearly on the computer. So I ask that the deferred approval be ignored. And finally, a waste management plan was submitted with the application, and therefore there should not be a need for a waste management plan to be submitted. And that's really all my comments.
All right. Questions by the panel?
Yes, can't you do something about the concern about the neighbour about his light well?
Well, it shouldn't be there in the first place. It is you can't have a window on a boundary. And in fact, the glass block will be non-transparent. So you won't be able to see it. In fact, we're quite happy to provide a glass block which is more translucent. So it in effect dissipates the light. We can certainly make sure that light fitting is located. It's only on a hall, so it can be located away from that particular window. So it's just a light source matter. It'll be a dimly lit sort of hall anyway.
So what is it you're offering?
We will locate a light fitting, which is further down the hall. So it's if any light does come through, it's only going to be a very muted light.
And what are we going to do about the glass blocks?
We will make them more opaque. It's a 1 hour fire rated glass block wall, which sits on the boundary.
And how do you make it more opaque?
Well, it's a selection of the glass blocks.
So what would you have to select to get it to be more opaque?
Well, one which is more diffuse. And there's a whole range of different blocks that are available for that sort of purpose.
So you'd be happy for a condition to that extent?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions, panel?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
No? All right. So, Mr. Madden?
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Mr. Cox?
Yes, thank you for the opportunity. Just to reiterate Jeff's point, it is a very narrow block. We've spent almost 15 months with council trying to find a suitable solution for the block. We've looked to replicate adjoining neighbours so that we have as minimal impact as possible. I appreciate the concern from number 90 Evans Street. We weren't actually aware of that situation, or certainly I wasn't, and certainly happy to commit to find a solution with that. We were looking to make use of that light in as much as that we could through that light well, given that the that we didn't want to impact the neighbour unnecessarily. Didn't occur to me that internal lighting was going to be a concern back the other way. So certainly happy to address anything there. It does go into a hallway and there's no immediate door opposite. So the amount of light that would fall into that space would be very limited anyway. It would only be in the evenings and it would only be passing traffic rather than sustained lighting, as I say, because it is a hallway. So yes, I'd appreciate the panel's consideration on what is a difficult site. It's sloping, it's very narrow. And we're committed to the heritage of the building. This house was built in around 1880, as best as we can determine, and we would appreciate the opportunity to sustain its longevity for another 100 years.
Any questions, panel?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for that. That concludes that particular item, and as with the other items, we will publish our decision in due course. And I think you can anticipate an approval subject to an extra condition relating to the opacity of the glass block panel. All right, so now we come to item number 10. This is the application for a secondary dwelling at 4 Haberfield Road, Haberfield. No one is registered to speak, but I'll ask if anyone is online in relation to that matter.
I think it's number 9, David.
Number 9, you're correct, yes. If no one's online, then the recommendation is for a refusal. And I think I am correct in saying that the panel is prepared to adopt the recommendation. Am I correct?
That's panel? Correct.
That's correct.
So
that's correct.
That decision is unanimous. The application is refused for all the reasons set out in the assessment report. So now we come to item number 10. Item number 10 is 35 to 41 Addison Road and 53 to 55 Philpott Street, Marrickville. This is to demolish the existing structure and erect a part 4 and part 5 storey mixed-use building. And we have Mr. Luke Anderson who wishes to address the panel. Mr. Anderson, please. Is Mr. Anderson online?
Mr. Chair, I can't see Mr. Anderson there. Maybe the minutes secretary can see him. I just can't pick him up.
Chair, yes,
can you hear me?
Oh, we do. We have you up on screen.
Can you guys hear me all right?
Yes, please proceed.
Hi. Awesome. Thank you very much for having me today. My name's Luke Anderson. I'm an owner occupier in the Globe Mills residential building here. I'm also the chairperson of the Strata Committee that represents the Owners Corporation. And so I do speak on behalf of the Owners Corporation today. And my colleague on the committee, Shafali, is also on the call with us today. I'll make it brief. There's two primary concerns that we have with this development. One is around parking and one is around the exceeding the height limit. I'll start with the first, the height limit. And in fact, I have behind me today is the block where the development is going to be taking place. It's the grey roof behind there. I own this apartment, and when the development takes place, it will actually exceed the horizon there and block off my view in this apartment. And it will actually even be more significant of an impact to the other apartment I own, which is next door. When I bought this apartment, I understood that it was above the area height limit because this building was built in the 1920s. And so I thought, that's great. I have this uninterrupted view indefinitely. And so I was quite disappointed to see that the proposed development exceeds that height limit and will potentially block the view of the airport that I very much enjoy. The other concern I'd like to present on behalf of myself and the Owners Corporation is around parking in the area. It is already extraordinarily tight to find parks here for guests, visitors, or anyone that has more than one car in their residence. And this is especially the case on a Friday or Saturday night when the local pub, the Vic on the Park, has an event on and parking is just cannot be found in the area. I was disappointed to see that the new development proposal has about 0.5 car spaces per unit. I don't think that is sufficient. It's a nice idea to say that people will catch public transport, but I don't think that's realistic, especially given the events in the area and the already very constrained parking issues. That's all I had to say on the matter. Thank you very much for your consideration, and I'm certainly open to questions if you have any.
All right, time for questions.
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Great, thank you so much.
All right, thank you very much. Now, Mr. Bartlett, or Miss Bartlett, or Mr. Chrissier, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kate Bartlett, I'm the planning consultant on behalf of the applicant.
Yes.
With your permission, what I might actually do is ask the landowner, Mr. Criolla, to talk briefly about this program of affordable housing that's being delivered as part of the Social and Affordable Housing Fund with the New South Wales Government. He's currently in the process of, we're in the process of obtaining consent for approximately 200 dwellings. And I think that's a little bit of useful background, and then I might touch on the planning issues that the objector raised.
Yes, all right.
Yes, so just by way of background, and some of you might be already aware, Chair, so we've already delivered quite a few projects in relation to this program. It's known as the Social and Affordable Housing Fund Mark II, state government initiative to drive further affordable and social housing into the community. So we've already delivered projects in Petersham, 20 sadly a Crescent Petersham. We just completed one in Newtown, so 2-2A Gladstone Street in Newtown. We've also delivered ones in Bondi Junction. We're in the process of delivering one at Potts Point and St Leonard's. It'll be the next one on the agenda. The program in conjunction with St George Community Housing, it's a 25-year program where St George Community Housing, who's the largest non-for-profit housing, tier one housing provider in New South Wales, will manage the tenancy and the building over the 25-year period. The program that we pitched the government was focused at displaced women, so women who were subjected to domestic violence, etc., who are trying to make their way back in the world through, you know, obviously they might have been subjected to various forms of abuse, etc. The idea of this housing is to have them in a community that allows them to find their feet again and then re-enter the community. So it's both social and affordable, so it covers both spectrums. Like I said, we've already delivered two in this municipality, one in Petersham, one in Newtown. This will be the third one in the inner west. There's also ones in other jurisdictions. So it's been we started it in 2018. We hope to deliver all the units by the end of 2023. It's a program with a lot of merit, and it's actually delivering outcomes. The council, the inner west council, have been supportive of the program to date. And we hope that we'll garnish your support going forward as well.
All right. Questions by the panel?
None, thank you.
No, thank you.
Well, sorry, David. Yes, I do have a question. The recommendation is for a deferred commencement consent. Does anyone from the applicant team have any comments to make in relation to the deferred commencement condition?
Thank you, Brian. I was going to touch on that issue. Given, I guess our question essentially is whether the raising of the ground floor for the commercial requires a deferred commencement condition, as opposed to something that could just be conditioned as a standard condition. Given the changes around legislation with the obligations for construction certificates, in our view, or I guess in my view, I had considered what is being conditioned as not needing deferred commencement, and that the prior to a CC could accommodate, although obviously we'd be guided by the panel on that matter.
Okay. So you don't have any objection to complying with the condition, whether it be deferred commencement or just a general operational condition?
The preference would be a general operational condition, but no objection to the issue.
Given that we've got a clause 4.6 request for height, can that condition be accommodated without increasing the height?
I suspected you might have flagged that. My understanding is that it can be, but I would probably touch with Jula Toth, the architect, just to check in whether there's any fundamental impacts there. I'm not sure if he's online, Jula.
Yeah.
I saw him earlier.
Yeah, she's online now. I can see her. She's on mute though. So, Julia.
Oh, it's a he, Jula.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, guys. I've just got a bit of COVID. The question is, the increase in height, it won't affect the increase in height if we have to raise the internal commercial floor level, because we're not going to raise the height of the building.
So it could be accommodated without increasing the height of the building.
Yeah.
And that is because? How will it be accommodated?
We've got a height, we've got 3.5 metres to the underside of the ground floor, to the first floor slab. So the height change is 550.
So
I think it's 550.
So what you're suggesting is you would drop the floor to
ceiling. A reduced floor to ceiling height within the commercial space on the ground floor.
In terms of the project viability, would that have an impact on the future flexibility for those commercial spaces?
A reduced head height? I don't believe so.
What would that bring the floor to ceiling height down to in the commercial?
Well, currently it's 3.5, so it'd be under 3.
Under 3?
Yeah.
Under 3 on a ground floor commercial.
Or commercial, yeah.
That's not really desirable, is it?
I think it's...
Because are we... What sort of commercial are we talking about?
Any retail commercial.
Exactly.
A shop, cafe, could be a dentist, could be, the uses.
Okay.
Is there any tolerance, Jula, on some of the other levels if we made minor incremental adjustments where you could still get the 2.7 floor to ceiling for the residential, but... maybe you're picking up 50 mils here or there, because that might be another option. I appreciate what Brian's saying around wanting to maintain floor to ceilings that are higher down on the ground floor.
Mm-hmm. We could push the floor to floors at the upper levels, but it's really difficult to achieve without raising that Addison Road section.
So what I'm trying to get at is a practical understanding of what's going to happen, and I don't see that maintaining the height is going to be really a feasible option. So following Kate's question, it's quite probable that we'll end up with a slightly higher building, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing, I'm not saying that's a good thing, I'm just trying to get to an understanding of what's the impact of this condition on the height of the building. From a practical perspective, taking into account the project feasibility and the ongoing viability and flexibility of those ground floor spaces going forward.
Oh yeah, so if we still want to achieve the floor to floor within the ground floor, then yes, we'll have to push up the upper levels of Addison Road
by the equivalent amount of raising the ground floor. Okay, good.
So,
thanks.
So just to comment on that as well, Brian, I'm not sure whether I'm able to share on Zoom, but when we look at the actual variation to the height control, it is relatively minor, and it's largely to do with roof level structures, including lift overrun, gullers, elements of the rooftop communal areas. I think what we would be seeking to ensure is that you're getting the floor to ceiling that you need for the ground floor, but minimising any potential future impact. I can pull up the height plan, although I appreciate the panel might have that in front of them anyway.
No, we've got the height plan. I just wanted an understanding for the panel's benefit that if we comply with this condition, there's a subsequent increase in the height of the building that follows. Now, what the panel does with that, we don't know. I don't know, but it's just important to know that that's the most probable outcome. Okay.
Okay. Just for clarity, I can just tell you those numbers again. On the ground floor, we have 3610 from the underside of slab, from the ground floor to the underside of first floor. And if we raise that up to comply with RL 97.6, we'll have 2.9 within the commercial space.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Good.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I was just going to, if it's okay, Chair, refer to some of the objective comments, or how would you like to run this next case?
Yes, please.
So obviously, and we've just touched on it briefly with the conversation, in terms of the clause 4.6 variation, it has been very carefully crafted to align with the key principles required, in particular, acknowledging that the additional floor space permitted because of the type of affordable housing that's being delivered is often difficult to achieve within local standard height controls. The view outlook issue, I think the officer's report does talk to this matter and makes the difference between, I guess, what we would call an iconic view or a critical view as opposed to outlook. There is some impact on outlook as a result of the development, but also the slight variation, but the impact of outlook from the variation, as you can see, is quite minor in that it's largely to do with rooftop ancillary structures. In terms of the parking allowance, the parking is reduced below the Marrickville DCP, and that's because the housing set has it as a must not refuse consent on the basis of parking if we meet the requirement, and the application does that. Aside from the issue of the flooding that we've just talked through, we're really happy with the outcome for this site and the program and how it's been working with council. I guess one other consideration I wanted to flag with the panel really relates to development contributions. The Marrickville contribution scheme does allow for exemptions for the purpose of affordable housing. And so in that sense, we would like that this site be exempted from development contributions for that reason. We, on other sites in the City of Sydney, have had the contributions waived for that reason, but I'll leave that up to the panel to discuss further. That was all I had to say unless panel members had questions.
All right, any questions, panel?
No, thank you.
All right. All right, that concludes that matter. And thank you all for your input. And we can now move on to the next item, which is the Esplanade Ashfield. There are two applications in the Esplanade Ashfield. One has an official address of Liverpool Road, but it backs on to the Esplanade. No one is registered to speak on this matter, but I'll ask if anyone on behalf of the applicant is here. This is items 11 and 12, both recommended for refusal. No one. All right. Then I'll quickly deal with these two matters. Both items 11 and 12 are recommended for refusal for various reasons. Does the panel agree with the recommendation in each case?
Yes, I do,
Mr. Chair.
All right. Well, in those two instances, items 11 and 12, the recommendation is adopted unanimously. So with that, we can conclude the public meeting. And thank you all for your input.